Live in Color with the Latin heartthrob Al Perez.
Oh yeah,
with Wolfie and Gang. You owe me quite a bit for stealing my move. But you know what? It's all open game.
Hey, this is Jimmy Street, host of the Live and in Color with Wolfie D podcast. Hear the life and times of professional wrestler Wolfie D. From his time in the territories with PG-13 to his time in WWE, ECW, WCW, TNA, and more. Nothing is off limits and nothing will be held back. Thanks again for tuning in. Here he is, Wolfie D.
All right, guys, welcome, welcome, welcome to Live and in Color with Wolfie D and my man Jimmy across the street, dude. Check it out what we got, man. This is a good one. This is a good one.
Yeah, I know. The Latin heartthrob, man.
You and me both are like, ah, oh, this is going to be cool. Because, I mean, obviously I'm going to talk about it with him, but I mean, that's where I got the Whirly Bird, man. Stole from him. Everybody used to ask me that. Where'd you come up with that? I stole from Al Perez.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you've always given him credit, you know?
Absolutely. So. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's just funny how many people like didn't remember, not necessarily him, but that move. Just,
right. You know. Right. Well, I mean, you could do like a lot of these guys and say you invented it, but that wouldn't have been cool, you know? So you gave credit to the man, and we've got him on our show today. And honestly, this one, we've never really made like we've made plenty of lists, but we've never really made like this is the list that shows you're getting what you wanted out of this podcast, right? We've never really done that.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's your Hogan's, there's your Flair's, there's your HBK's, there's your kind of either budgetary constraint people or just never going to get them people. And Al Perez, I think, is one of those guys that's like, I mean, like one of the top tier guys for us just because of two factors, the Whirly Bird and Gary Hart.
Yeah.
So,
your guy and my move.
Yeah. But I've always been a fan of Al Perez. We both, you know, so very, very talented, very underrated wrestler.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I can't wait to dig into this one, man. This is going to be really fun. And I actually pre-ejaculate? No. I talked to him the other day just for a brief second, just to kind of, you know, because we'd never crossed paths. And so he seems like a super nice guy, man. And like I said, I can't wait to dig into this.
Yeah. Yeah, this is cool. And so just to kind of give you all a glimpse behind the curtain here, Wolfie and I, we book our guests as they come and as we think of them and sometimes as they're available. Well, our old buddy Captain's Corner, Nick, called us up and said, hey, I've got this cool deal going on down in Florida. It's called GrappleCon Glory Days. It's April 20th in Orlando, Florida. We'll talk more about it in the show, but this is the sole reason. This is a co-sponsored show from Captain's Corner, our old buddy, Nick. So very excited to have Al. And we thank you, Nick, for helping us hook this up, man. Really.
Yeah, for sure, man. We really do. So, yeah, man, that's, Nick's our guy. I got another cool guy, man, that he's doing a documentary on the first year of TNA, and he contacted me. He's from the UK, and he contacted me about this, and should be coming out in about 3 weeks. His YouTube channel, you know, is huge. MarkyD123, for everybody that's listening.
Oh,
go
yeah.
Subscribe to him, and he's got some good stuff on there. He's already got a video of me and Jamie and did John Cena. Still our gimmick. The guy, it's got everything he puts up gets thousands and thousands of looks, but anyway, so I think in about 3 weeks there's going to be like an hour-long documentary on the first year of TNA that I'll be a part of, man. And I just want to say thank you to him for having me on, man. Super nice guy. So
that's very cool, man. Very excited to see that. And yeah, he's actually a buddy of our buddies, Brian Hardison. Brian Turner's VHS Rehab. So yeah, they're buddies. And yeah, so
he actually mentioned that to me off the air that Brian had said hello to me and Athena said hello to me, and he ribbed me a little. He's like, I heard you used to give her a little shit when y'all were in school. not too bad. But anyway, man, let's get Al Perez, man.
All right. We'll be right back after these messages.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey folks, to get your official Live and in Color with Wolfie D merchandise, go to prowrestlingtees.com/livewolfied. Check it out.
If you're listening to Live and in Color with Wolfie D on Apple Podcasts and like what you're hearing, go ahead and leave a 5-star rating. And while you're at it, write a review. Tell us what you liked. Tell us what you'd like to hear in the future. It's very important to us and always appreciated. Thanks again.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. And wow, Jimmy, man, this one, me and you are both really stoked about. I'm using your word, man. Somebody that I stole a move from. I mean, we all steal stuff in the wrestling business, but everybody kept asking me, and you know what I'm talking about, when I did Whirly Bird. Everybody's like, where'd you get that, man? Did you come up with that? I'm like, no, I stole it from Al Perez. And I am so excited to have the Latin heartthrob, Al Perez, on the show today. How are you doing, sir?
Great, Wolfie. Live in color with the Latin heartthrob, Al Perez.
Oh, yeah.
With Wolfie and gang. You owe me quite a bit for stealing my move. But you know what? It's all open game.
It is, man. We used to rib in the dress room saying, oh, I invented the sunset flip. Oh, no, I invented the lockup. I invented this. No, where did you get it from? Where did you get the helicopter from? Did you make it up or did you see it somewhere?
Actually, yeah. No, I made it up. What happened when... Well, I was in the business already, and a friend of mine wanted me to throw him in the swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, no problem. And I picked him up like that. He was only about 180 pounds.
Yeah.
I picked him up like that, and I spun him around, and I threw him in the pool. And he thought it was the greatest thing ever. And I was like, I can do that in the ring.
Yeah.
And I did it, and I tried it, and it was a big hit.
Yeah.
Up until you, you're the first one that tells me that it had been done by other than me.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
I know people have tried to do it and can't get it done.
Man, and that makes me feel even better. I got it done, by God.
You're a thief, a thief.
Yeah.
Man, and I used to try, I don't know about you, but if I tried to get a 360 out of them, if I couldn't get a 360, I wasn't happy.
I would spin them a few times around before I dumped them.
Yeah, but what I'm saying in the air.
Oh, yeah, me too. As I let him go, he would still come down doing 360.
Yeah, yeah, man.
I spun at least three times around.
Yeah, got to get the momentum up. And true or false, for me, it was really like some people could take it better than others. A lot of it had to do with how they took it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. If they would panic up there. It didn't end up good for him.
Yeah.
It never bothered me.
And I've had people tell me, though, they're like, God, man, you got to do that move tonight? And I'm like, yes, man. And they'd be like, man, it just looks like it hurts. And most people would be like, oh, it wasn't that bad. It was actually kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah, it was. I spun Steve Kern one time.
Yeah.
And... I mean, you know, they're experienced guys are real good about stuff like that.
Yeah.
I spun him, and when he hit, he sat up and said, you messed up my high, and he went back down, and he still spun around again. And he said, that is, yeah, yeah. He said, that's a beautiful move, but you'll never get me in there again. It's scary as shit.
That's awesome, man. But yeah, it was just something I saw you do on, you know, TBS or whatever as a young man. And I wasn't too far from getting into the business. And I just remember sitting, I was like, man, that was a cool move. And then when I first started, I was a lot smaller, different style of wrestling that I had until I got to TNA and I bulked up and I changed my whole move set. And a lot of people that knew me didn't even know it was me. I shaved my head, all kinds of stuff, but found a bunch of new moves. And I remember seeing that. And I was like, man, I'm going to start doing that. And I did. And it worked for me, man. It worked for me. Thank you, Al.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem. The key to it is when you release full extension.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah, get down. But yeah, man, we are so happy to have you on the show. Let's say again.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. Yeah. The heaviest guy I ever spun. And I don't ask me names because I can't. I got CRS really bad.
Oh, okay. I heard yeah, about no problem. That. Can you no explain problem. To the listeners what CRS is?
Oh, it gets to everybody when they get a certain age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's basically you can't remember shit.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Especially after all the bumps and things that we take, you know.
Oh, I know.
But it's just, you know, I was thinking about some ribs that we used to pull, and man, I just can't think of any anymore, you know. And either I don't want to think of them or I'm trying to forgive them.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, yeah, so bad. But yeah, on that helicopter, the heaviest guy I ever spun was 365.
I was gonna ask you that.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's a dude right there. Wow.
Yeah.
And he was about 6'4", 6'5".
Wow. Who was he? Do you remember?
He said he don't. He said he can't remember.
Okay, gotcha.
No, I can't remember anything like that. But yeah. I know the heaviest guy I tried to get up. Uh-huh. Was Moondog Rex, and he was at 408.
Wolfie knows him.
And he was a big one.
Yeah.
As I got him up across my chest to try to flip him back, all his weight went down. And I was walking across the ring trying to flip him up. I there was no way I could get him.
Yeah.
So yeah, but my heaviest one I ever got successful was 365.
How did that go? Did you get a half a rotation on him?
No. I always did full rotation.
Nice.
I did my
nice.
Oh, I mean, I didn't play.
Wolfie did it to Mickey James one time, and she's actually still spinning somewhere. We don't know. We haven't seen her in a long time.
Yeah. Well, that's why they say, "Well, I'm dizzy." Yeah, you are dizzy now.
That's funny, man.
I enjoyed it, but I used to. I don't know how I did it myself, but I used to spin it about three or four times before I extended up and released them.
Right.
So it looked like a whirlybird coming down.
Yeah, it did. Yeah,
but yeah, I appreciate you doing that because it worked out for me. So. Very good, man. So here's what I want to know. I've heard different things, man, because everybody says about you, like the career should have kept going, man. Like you should have done more in the business, man. You had everything, man. Did you just get burned out, or was there just something that happened that was like, man, screw this?
No, I loved it. I can't say I didn't. I loved what I did for a living.
Yeah.
And I got hurt. I blew out my elbow. That's what took me out. Gotcha. I had an infection in my elbow. You remember the old bursar sac? How it flame up?
Yeah. And I actually tore my tricep off the bone, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
That's what I did too.
Oh man,
that's what I did too.
Yep.
And well, after four surgeries, they were talking about cutting my arm off.
Damn.
So then I was done. I had one match afterwards. About 9-10 months afterwards in Pennsylvania. So I forgot who it was.
Mm-hmm.
And my arm just felt like it was going to fall off because they took out 60% of my tendon to my triceps.
Wow.
So I knew I was done.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
But it was something that I loved the sport because to me it was a sport. I wrestled amateur 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the sport of it. And I treated it like, man, it was my job, my career.
Yeah.
The reason I left was because there was no more territories to go to.
Right.
And after I had problems with Vince,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I was done. You know. Yeah. Then I went to Japan a few times after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was it. You know.
Yeah.
But
so
no,
what,
as far as
what happened,
I walked off. But well, okay. Ask me, what happened with Vince? Okay, I'll tell you. You always hear rumors, okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, when you see a few things in the locker room and you see a few things at the hotels, you know, you just try to ignore it because they're all the boys.
Right.
And I was at the hotel, and Pat Patterson, there were like 10, 12 guys getting rooms.
Yeah.
And I won't mention his name because I'm sure he's got a wife and kids.
Right.
But we're at a hotel, and the clerk asked him one bed or two. And he said two. And the guy standing behind me was Pat Patterson. Patterson hollered out in front of all the guys, in front of everybody there, one bed will be fine. And the guy put his head down, and he said one bed. So about 3 weeks after that, we're doing TV again. And Pat Patterson comes up to me and tells me, hey, Al, let's talk. You know, because he was my boss, basically.
Right.
And he sits on an 8-foot table with his back up against the wall. And I'm standing on the side of the table. He starts telling me, he says, oh, you know, it's good to have you here. You're going to make a lot of money, that little French-Canadian accent.
Right.
You're going to make a lot of money here. You know, we'll give you a gimmick. You make a lot of money here. Oh, we'll do this. We'll put you on our TV. You'll be a big star. You make a lot of money. You know, besides that, here you go both ways.
Yeah.
And yeah. And I kicked the table over. He went tumbling down. He said, no, I'm talking bad guy, good guy. What did you think I meant?
Oh, my God. You know.
And so I just heard this in the hotel, and I'm like, you know.
Yeah.
And then the next TV, Vince comes up, and he starts talking to me, and he tells me, Al, I know you're having a hard time here because no one knows who you are.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Vince, every time I hit that ring, no matter what match I'm on, Latin Heartthrob, where's Gary Hart, and Kerry Von Erich's going to kick your ass. No matter what town, what state, these are the three things I hear at every match, every town, every state. And you're telling me that no one knows who I am?
Mm.
He goes, well, yeah. I said, so basically you're telling me I'm a piece of shit to the WWF.
Mm.
He goes, no. I said, yeah, Vince, that's what you're saying. I'm a piece of shit to the WWF. He says, soon we get you on TV, it'll be a lot easier for you. I said, okay. So I made a call to my wife. The next, because he used to film 2 days of TV.
Right.
The next day he comes up to me and he tells me, Al, I'm looking for somebody to make my world champion look good. I said, me? He said, you'd be perfect. Now, this is right after I had words with Pat.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you'd be perfect. And I said, Vince, yesterday I was a piece of shit to the New York crowd or the WWF crowd. Today I'm over good enough to make your world champion look good. He goes, yeah, you'd be perfect. I told him, see, you got the wrong effing guy. And that was it for that.
Yeah. Damn. Who was the champion right then? Who was the champion?
Jim.
Oh, okay.
Jim, Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And you worked with him back when he was Dingo Warrior and stuff. I remember that.
Yeah, but no. Yeah. He and Sting had just come into the business. I never had a match with him. Never worked with him.
Oh, really?
But he and Sting had just come in. So, yeah, he was fresh. He was a big boy, let me tell you.
Yeah.
And he was a little not coordinated, but he was a big boy.
Yeah.
And he didn't last long in Texas before he took off. I'm not sure where he went after that. But, I never had matches with him.
I think they went to Memphis for a minute. I can't remember if the Memphis was before World Class, but yeah, I think
it was Memphis World Class and then straight to the WWF, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. Not to be a nerd.
He didn't last long where I was at.
Yeah, he didn't. Yeah.
So have you seen this new Iron Claw movie, speaking of the Von Erichs?
My wife just told me today, she said, well, you know, they'll probably mention that. I saw bits and pieces. I never saw the whole show, whole movie.
Yeah.
And from what I saw, man, I'm going to say 90% of it's not true. 90% of it's bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of mixed stuff on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard people say they were, thought it was amazing, and I heard people say it was the worst thing that's ever been on the screen. So, I, you know.
Yeah, yeah. They were, to me, and I worked for Fritz Von Erich.
Right.
He was still the boss when I was there, okay? And he demanded respect, but he also gave respect. He was a man of his word, and he was good. I didn't have problems with him at all. Now, in the movie, some people were telling me that they were he was pushing steroids on his kids. No, he wasn't. He was not pushing steroids on any of them.
Right.
If anything, he was trying to do was trying to get them straight on the right path.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, he made his living in the wrestling business and wanted his kids to do it too.
Right. Right.
You know, so I don't see any harm in that. I mean, my son, he wrestled in high school, he wrestled in college, and he was going to take some time off. I said, you're not taking time off. Dad, I'll just wrestle like you. I said, hell no. You can get an education and use your brain instead of your body. I said, look at me. I said, I'm all beat up. You know, it's not going to happen to you.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the route he took. And I'm glad, and I know he's glad he is too. So, but that movie wasn't, to me, it wasn't good.
Yeah.
You know,
one of these days,
and like I said, I saw pieces of it. Yeah. But they didn't mention Chris Von Erich either.
Yeah, that's another thing I keep hearing is they left parts out, and the main thing saying is that it should have been longer because they like condensed it too much or something to try to tell that story.
Yeah, it could have been longer, but it would have been worse, I think. Yeah. I had matches with three out of five. Okay.
Yeah.
And. Again, I won't mention names because he's still around.
Yeah.
But I was waiting for a sunset flip off the top rope, and the guy falls next to me, missed me completely.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I mean, things like that happened. You know, I was like, and I never stood there waiting for anybody to come on. Okay, let's go. I'm here. I'm waiting for you.
Cause yeah.
I'm not going to look like an idiot. You know, I'm going to wait to get hit. No, it's not happening. So I kicked him a few times, dropped a few elbows. I said, what the hell happened? And he tells me, someone must have opened the back door and the wind blew me over.
Oh, my God.
Hey, yeah, man, so, but I mean, there was some of those, I mean, just the atmosphere of some of those, like, big stadium shows in Texas and stuff, man. Tell me about that, man. Just the atmosphere, because that's something that, you know, for me, just growing up in Nashville and being a Memphis guy, man, when I got to wrestle at the Mid-South Coliseum or when I wrestled at the fairgrounds in Nashville, those are some of my most memorable matches, even though, you know, I've been in Madison Square Garden, I've been some other places, but, man, that's what I grew up on, and just that feeling where the people are just, you know, they really actually love you or they really actually hate you, and that atmosphere is what I craved.
Yeah, it's a drug that you can't get enough of. That's really is.
Right.
When you walk in, I was booed most of my career. I loved it. Yeah, that means I was doing my job right.
Yeah.
There was always that lady equivalent though that always never booed you though. I remember that.
that was a Latin heartthrob when it came out of him, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you were getting like magnum pops from the women, but the men were like, I hate that guy.
I made an interview one time, and I forgot the exact words that I said, but it was more along lines like, yeah, the women love me, but their boyfriends hate me.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, when you go to big buildings, when you go to big stadiums like that, because in Dallas, they had, you know, we were in Texas Stadium one time. Mm-hmm. And the numbers of people, I can't say, I don't remember, but when you walk out there and you hear the cheering, you hear the booing, and you hear everything. And most of the time when you get out to the ring, you zone it all out. You don't hear any of it.
Yeah.
But I learned to play off the people. And that's what a lot of guys can't do nowadays. I don't watch it anymore.
Amen.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of guys, you know, they just focus on what they're doing, If you learn how to play off the crowd, they have better matches, better performance from everyone.
Yep.
They don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
You know, but when you walk out there and you see a big stadium and these people are cheering or booing for you and you feed off it, oh, you can't beat that feeling.
No.
There's no drug good enough to match that.
Yeah, for sure.
It is awesome.
Yeah, and I feel like they can't do it no more, really, because when they're first starting out on these indies, they're wrestling each other. They're not wrestling guys that know what time it is or have been out there in front of big crowds.
Right.
I was 16, 17, lucky enough to be working with George Weingroff, Gypsy Joe, and Danny Davis, and
you know,
people that could show me how to do it, man. And that's the unfortunate part. It's the blind leading the blind now.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, and everything is you have so much time. You have so much time. You got to do this. And the referee's telling you, oh, we got to cut it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I used to go out there and, well, with Gary Hart, I never had a time limit.
Yeah, okay.
They tell me. Al, under 20.
Yeah.
I would take it to the 20. I would take it because I loved it.
Yeah.
They said to me one time, a long time ago, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Yeah.
And I said, that's bullshit. They said, what? I said, that's bullshit. Because if you love what you do, you want to be better at it and you work harder at it.
You work harder. Amen. Yeah. Amen.
And I did. I put everything I had into it. I remember matches in a sportatorium where you're talking about 100 degrees is cool in there.
Right.
Okay.
And wasn't the ring stuck in the middle? Like it had four posts and it was basically there all the time? Yeah. Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
But, No. And it was there. It wasn't moving. That was the only thing in that building.
Right.
You know, they only had wrestling in that building. But that atmosphere in that building, it was 5,000 people. And it was like the acoustics and everything was just bam. Everything was perfect in that building.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I had matches with Matt Bourne, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
That I went 90 minutes with him.
Wow.
I mean, you know, Flair and all these guys talk about hour draw, hour Broadway, this, that, and the other. No, I did an hour with Matt. It was the 1-2-3 is a 1-2 time ran out. People start bullshit. So Gary Hart and Matt's dad Tony Bourne got together and go another 15 minutes. So we did the same thing another 15 minutes right there at the end. 1-2, ding ding ding. You know, and they bullshit. Well, hell, we did another 15 minutes the same way, and had a standing ovation, man. They actually cheered me on that match.
So,
they recognized the work ethic.
Yeah, exactly. He did. When I left that building, when I left that mat, there was nothing dry on it. I mean, it was drenched.
Oh, yeah.
Matt kept telling me, just pin me. Nope, let's go. Because I was in shape to go.
Yeah.
And I did.
Yeah.
And I'd keep him alive. And we would go. And I got to the dressing room and he gave me a beer. I think a half a beer. I think a couple of sips. I was drunk. I was dehydrated that bad.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Body.
But yeah, that was the best sound effects was in that building was unbelievable.
And it was set so perfect up. Just how they were around you in a circle. I mean, man.
Oh, yeah.
And when you see it empty, you get an idea of how it's set up really well. And man, it was just like, what a place for wrestling.
Yep. It was ideal because the ringside was close, but it all went from straight up.
Yeah.
You know, I think you had like 6 feet between the ring and where the fans started.
Mm.
And it just went straight up. And it was, I mean, the building, the sound effects, the acoustics, everything was like perfect in that building, you know? And I used to walk out there and just watch. And that was the difference between me and a lot of guys, too. Mm-hmm. I would watch a few of the first, second, third matches to see what body part they're working. And then I would go, and when it was during my match, I would not do that body part.
Right.
You know, because I wanted it to be different.
Yeah.
And I did. Most people can only work an arm or a head, you know, a leg. Well, you work the whole body. You learn how to do the whole body. And just connect it all.
Right? Yeah.
And that's why I enjoyed it. you know, because I would do things different. Something that they always tell me, but, you know, why'd you do this? Why? Well, I said, well, the way I was taught, if you beat a piece of shit, you didn't beat anything.
Yeah.
You know, so you build your point. Now, I was world champion over there, and most of the places I went, I had a title. So mm-hmm. I was a champion on most of my cards, mm-hmm. and I would build my opponent that he was going to beat me. And then when I beat him, I beat something.
Yeah. Right?
They don't have that mentality anymore.
Right.
You know, and most of the guys now can't tell a story. And that was the main thing that we did back in my day. We could tell a story.
Yeah.
You know, in that ring, they used to tell me, oh, man, you can have a match with a broomstick. I said, yeah, I probably could. You know, but I hate to take a punch from him. You know?
Well, I mean, now you got guys wrestling sex dolls and stuff. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't, like I said, it's been a while since I watched. I flip on the channel and see some of it, and I just can't do it anymore, you know.
Yeah.
And change
it's
it,
tough, man. You know? It's tough to watch. When I mean, and not to take anything away from the athleticism of some of them, but it's not what I signed up for. That's what I tell everybody. So,
yeah,
my training and my wrestling was a lot different than what they're doing now. But
exactly.
Let's take a quick time out and get a word from one of my dope ass sponsors, and we'll be right back with more Live and in Color with Wolfie D.
This is Nick from Captain's Corner, and I'm here to tell you about an amazing event that's happening on Saturday, April 20th in Orlando. That event is called Glory Days, and it takes place at the Rosen Center, which is right off International Drive. The Rosen Center has an assortment of restaurants, and on April 20th, it will hold dozens of international wrestling stars for what should be an unforgettable day. The lineup includes Ron Simmons, Stan Hansen, Larry Zbysko, Kimberly Page, Matt Riddle, Devon Dudley, and many others. One of the featured events at Glory Days is a world-class championship wrestling panel that will feature discussion on the Von Erichs, the Iron Claw movie, the Sportatorium, and so much more by the people that lived it, including the One Man Gang, Al Perez, Missy Hyatt, and more. Tickets are available now, and they are as low as $30. Head on over to Eventbrite and type in Glory Days. Hope to see everyone in Orlando for Glory Days on April 20th.
So we had had my friend Eric Watts on last week, and I know you work for Bill Watts. You got any good Bill Watts stories?
Bill was a hard guy to work for.
That's what they say.
Yeah, he was a real hard guy to work for, and he liked the tough guy.
Yeah,
he really liked the tough guy. Steve Williams was one of his top guys. He loved Steve Williams because he was an Olympic champ. You know, he wrestled this, he wrestled. He was really good. He liked the other guy from Michigan. I forgot his name. Anyway, there was a bunch of tough guys. He would bring the Steiner brothers. Rick Steiner was the last name.
Yeah.
So when Steiners came in there, you know, Rick Steiner was, he was awesome, but he liked tough guys.
Right.
I had a reputation of a tough guy. I wasn't a tough guy. I just portrayed it, I guess, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I never had any problems with them. And he brought Dick Slater in, and, you know, Dick tried to rule the match, and, you know, I'm not into eating anybody up, and that's what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay there, but it seemed like every other territory that I would hit, I would do good in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I needed a break in between or something, you know?
Right.
But, and I'll tell you what, the difference between babyface and heel,
mm-hmm.
when I turned heel, oh, that it's like the light came on and I could do no wrong. There was nothing I couldn't do in that ring.
Yeah. You
know? I guess I wasn't a guy who had to be led. I wanted to lead.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and man, it was just cause I never, the way I was taught, like I said, you build your opponent up and then you beat somebody. You know, and that's the mentality that I went in there with. I had job guys that I made look good until I beat him.
Right.
You know,
kind of like I know you remember Action Mike Jackson, and Flair would give him everything, man.
Yeah, yeah. And but that's how you have to build an opponent,
right?
You know, yeah. Because they're expecting you that. And look, you had a bad day until the end. You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, Flair. To me, Flair was one of the best ones out mm-hmm. here as far as world champions, you know, because he would work, but he only did that one match.
Yeah, I know.
He only did that one match. I could never do that.
Yeah.
I could never do that.
Especially when he worked with the big guys. The match was really about the same every time and really not taking up.
Yeah, well, he did that for his security because he knew he wasn't going to get hurt there. And then you can't blame him for that.
Oh, yeah, true.
You know?
True.
You can't blame because no one wants to get hurt.
Right.
You know, I had matches. Sid Vicious is another one.
Yeah.
When he started with NWA.
Yeah.
They worked a match. They wanted a match with him and I. And the guy was sitting in the chair. And I didn't know how big he was. I never knew who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And he was sitting down. And I said, Al, you're going to go over on him. I said, okay. So I said, look, I said, just don't do anything until I tell you, you know, we'll take care of it. And he stood up like, I looked at the size of this guy. I said, I will beat your ass even if I have to hit you with a 2x4. And his eyes got real big and, you know, he's, oh, okay. And he started panicking just in the locker room, you know?
Yeah.
So we got out in the match in the ring and I looked at him and he was scared. He was nervous. He was all tight. He was a big boy, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
And we locked up, and he was stiff as shit. He was so stiff. So I started pulling him into me and pushing him back, pulling him in, pushing him back. And then I break up with him, you know, and I look at him again. He's scared. He was already blown up. And I locked up again. I said, you ready? And he goes, yeah, all tight. I said, let's dance.
Mm-hmm.
And he popped his head up. He goes, what?
Uh-huh.
I said, let's dance. And we just started moving like we're just dancing. And we go from rope to rope and his back on, my back on his. And we had a great match after that.
Yeah.
Because he learned how to just relax, just to loosen up and relax, you know?
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of guys would get hurt because the opponent is so big and so strong, don't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
I had to work
Sid in Arkansas one time for Memphis, and I told the booker, I said, listen, man, I said, obviously I don't have a problem putting him over. I said, but I'm not taking that powerbomb, man, because he'd plant you on your head, man. And this was like a spot show. I said, I'll take the choke slam, but I'm not taking the powerbomb. So you can tell him that because it was different dressing rooms. But I was smart enough by that time in my career to say no when needed.
Oh, yeah. No, I said no a bunch.
Hey, Jimmy, I know you got a lot of times. Sorry, Al. I'm going to hot tag Jimmy. Pa-pow. Come on in. And I know you got a bunch of stuff for Al.
Oh, you know it. I mean, I've got a book full for Al. But if you know Jimmy Street at all, you know where I'm going to start with Mr. Al Perez. So, Al, when I'm growing up, I'm a big time, you know, wrestling fan. Of course, that's why we're doing this right now. Partially is because of I met Wolfie D and we got a podcast. So when I was a kid, I loved World Class, but I'm a mid-Atlantic kid, right? So I grew up in the Virginia area, North Carolina. And man, I when I saw you and honestly, my personal favorite manager of all time, Gary Hart, on TV, I just thought you guys made such a great combo. So I guess if you don't mind, can we talk a little bit about Gary right now? Would you be okay with that?
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So what was he like? What kind of role did he play in your career?
He was the one that started me off. I was a baby face in Texas, in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Like I started off, most people start off as a baby face. And I started off as a baby face, and I went to Africa.
Okay.
And that's where I turned heel. That's when the light came on and I turned heel. I met Gary in Puerto Rico, still as a baby face. And he asked me if I wanted to come to world class and work for him. I was like, sure, no problem. Because I was looking for a territory because I was already burned out of Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And the first when I got to the match, the first day I showed up, he and Bruiser Brody called me into the room and said, Al, he said, I'm the booker. And I said, okay, which I knew. And he says, I'd like to be your manager, and I would like for you to be my champion. Is that okay with you? I was like, yeah, you know. And Brody said, well, you know, good to have you here. Let's, you know, let's work it. So we did. And Gary's the one that came up with the Latin Heartthrob.
Okay. Okay.
Now, I had already turned heel, and that's what I wanted because Gary was a heel manager.
Right, right.
And, I mean, everything fell in place when it got with Gary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because he had his heat, and he would let me do whatever I wanted to do in the ring with no interference.
Yeah.
Just Gary's presence alone was enough to have heat.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. He was that way.
Right.
And if I got into a pickle, you know, if I get into a pickle with somebody on me, Gary would just hit the mat.
Yeah.
And when someone hits the mat, the first natural instinct is to look. You know?
Right, right.
And whoever I was working with, Gary would hit the mat. He would turn his head and look. That was my opportunity.
Yeah.
And then people realized what he was doing, but that's how he got over, just hitting the mat.
Man, that's subtle, but I love that. Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. If you think about it, naturally, if you're doing something and you hear a boom,
right.
Look.
Yeah.
And just that split second is opportunity.
Yeah, I love that. You know? Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, Gary was, I'm going to say, and there's been a lot of managers, but to me, Gary was one of the best.
Amen.
He did the least and one of the best.
Yeah.
So Gary's the one that got me started with the Lad's Heartthrob.
Okay. Okay. Let me ask you, did he always really carry the razor blade in his pocket? Was it always in there?
Oh, you heard about that, huh?
Oh, you know it.
Yeah.
Read the book, join the fan club. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot the guy's name, but he was a Mongolian something. I forgot what he was. Anyway, we were in Dallas and I walked off. I was doing something else and I hear commotion. I turn around and this Mongolian guy is, he sliced me. I mean, Gary cut him in the face.
Wow.
Gary was fast. He was fast with that razor blade.
Yeah, man.
You know, apparently, the guy smacked Gary from behind.
Okay.
And when Gary turned around, he came out with that blade.
Yeah.
Well, the manager.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, since you just explained it so perfectly, I would love to know, like, what would you say his normal average, what would you just say, like, Gary Hart's normal temperament was like?
You never saw Gary get upset.
Okay. Okay.
You couldn't tell if he was upset because not even 2 minutes after he sliced this guy, he came walking back up. I said, "What, Gary, what happened?" He fucking tried to hit me from behind. You know, it's no big deal. I mean, he shook it off like, okay, next. Never saw Gary get really upset with anybody like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And if he was, it was quick, and then that was it. It was on and off.
Yeah.
Gary was awesome. What a great manager he was.
Oh, man. I mean, I did a little bit in the business in Nashville. Like I said, that's how I met Wolfie. But I modeled my entire gimmick after Gary. I you know, literally as much as I could. You know, Gary Hart. My name's Jimmy Street. I always thought my name, first name ends with a Y and ends with a T. I was like,
you're reaching now. You're reaching.
Yeah. Well, no. I'm not reaching. I'm actually stretching. It's farther than preaching. But anyway, my buddy Josephus said one time, he said, Jimmy, you love Gary Hart and your name is Jimmy. Why don't you go by Jimmy Hart?
Oh my God.
And I said, Jimmy Hart, yeah.
Right. And I said, you know, that's a great idea. And he was like, oh, wait, you had to know Josephus, but that was the funniest thing I'd ever heard him say. And, it, you know, so one thing about it, I got his book, right? Okay. And I read his whole book. And I mean, I've read it a couple times, to be honest, but What would you say, like, if you could just say, okay, these are the small things or this is the big thing, what would you say you learned from him?
Couth. Gary was always calm.
Okay.
He was always calm. And he could speak. Give him a mic, he could speak.
Yeah, brother.
You know? Yeah, and there was nothing that Gary couldn't do.
Right.
As far as, you know, speaking as a manager or anything. He was... To me, like I said, he was the best one ever.
What I liked about his promos was he would involve, even though you were not in an angle with Ric Flair, he was talking about, you know, I'm going to do this for Ricky Flair, you know, this kind of thing. Because when he would bring those guys into the conversation, it would seem like it included you in their space. Does that make sense?
Always.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Always. I love that about him, you know.
I always did. Gary never tried to steal the show from anybody, any of his guys that he had.
But he brought you up, it felt like. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, yes, okay, Al Perez belongs right beside Ric Flair in my mind. You know what I mean?
And he did. He tried to set that match up several times.
Oh, man.
And when I got to NWA, now, I'd never been beaten on TV. Now, I did my job with Nikita Koloff and a few angles that I had matches with and stuff. Which is no big deal. That was my job. But at the time when I was there, Ric Flair and Dusty were having their battle because Dusty was a booker and Dusty wanted the world title one more time and Ric wanted it one more time. And, well, I want to be number 13. I want to be a 13 world champion. You know, and this feud was going back and forth.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to contribute that to a lot of my ending of my career, because it seemed like every place I went, there was confusion with someone else.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah.
Because right after when Ted Turner bought it from Crockett's, they wanted, Flair wanted to be world champ. Dusty was, then they brought another booker, and I think it was Ken Mantell. I'm not sure. I can't remember who it was. And they brought him into NWA. And then they brought Jimmy Barnett in. Mm-hmm. And Jim Barnett was real good friends with Gary. So it was almost like, I'm not sure who was in charge, but they were getting me away from Gary.
Mm-hmm.
So they started giving him Abdullah the Butcher, Larry Zbyszko, and throwing a few other guys at him, and Al, and then it got to where Gary didn't have time for me anymore.
Because
he was going out with Abdullah, he was doing the tag match, and they teamed me up with Larry a few times also. But it was like, you know, Gary was taking care of Gary.
Right, right. Okay? Yeah.
And I told Gary, I said, Gary, when the new booker came in, I said, I'm going to go give my notice. I'm going to go talk to him to find out what's going on, because now Gary was preoccupied with someone else, mostly Abdullah.
Abdullah Muta.
Al, you know.
Yeah,
he used to tell me, Al, he used to call me Alf. Alf, it's okay, Alf. Don't worry about it, don't worry. And then one of the last matches that I had before I went into the office, Gary told me, Al, I can't go out with you. I'm going to go out with Abdullah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I could have jumped the gun, but I thought I was reading the writing on the wall.
Right. Yeah.
So the new booker comes in and everybody waiting in line to see what their position. So I waited in line just like everybody else. And I went into the office and I said, what's your plan for me? And Flair was in there at the time, you know, because I guess Dusty was not the booker anymore. And Flair was in there. I guess Flair is good at getting ears. Okay.
Yeah.
And he said, Al, I see something in you. I just can't put my finger on it. Can you do the Jimmy Snuka off the top rope? I said, I can do anything in that ring. I'll do anything in that ring. But that's Jimmy. That's not me.
Right. Yeah.
He says, I just can't put my finger on it. I said, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you my 2-week notice. And if you can't put your finger on it by then, you have my notice. I'm out of here. He said, well, give me a chance. Well, right after that, they booked me with Flair, okay? And I told Flair. I said, Rick, because now I see all my bookings against Flair with Flair with Flair. I said, Rick, you can beat me anywhere you want, but you're not beating me at home.
Yeah.
And he tell me, "Oh, no problem. We'll work it out. No problem. I understand. Well, Dusty moved back to Florida, and Dusty started running Florida again.
Mm-hmm.
So I had just given my notice, and now I'm with Flair. And I told him, I said, "You're not beating me at home." So he beat me in Pennsylvania. He beat me in all the places I had booked with him. And I had no problem in doing the job for him.
Right.
You know,
right.
I did it. And when we got to Florida, to Tampa, or to St. Pete, I walked straight into his dressing room, and I told him, "Rick, I said, I'm home. You're not beating me." He said, "Oh, we'll work a DQ, a double DQ." I said, "That's fine." Okay, so I was taking my time dressing because I knew it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
So here comes the booker, and he tells me, he says, "Al, how do you figure that my world champion beating you is going to hurt you? He's beating everybody. How is it going to hurt you?" I said, "It's not going to hurt me." He says, "Good." I said, "Because he's not going to beat me." And he stopped. He says, "Well, I guess I don't need you anymore." I said, "Okay, goodbye."
Yeah.
And that was it, you know. So then I moved back to Florida because I wanted to retire at home.
Right. Yeah.
When they had Florida Championship Wrestling, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to end my career at home, you know.
Yeah.
And, well, the year I decided to come home, they closed Florida.
Oh, man.
So I got screwed out of that, too.
Yeah. Man.
You know, I've always noticed, and you can tell me if you agree with this or have seen it, I always feel like it's kind of like a thing in the business of bookers and stuff to want to beat guys in their hometowns. I see that a lot. Do you agree?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
What do you think that is?
Because it's the crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
The crowd that was in St. Pete was my people.
Right.
You know, it was my people. Now, it wasn't for the title. If it was for the title, I'd have done my job.
Sure.
You know, if it was for the title, no problem. But just to beat me because he's trying to get over again because he got to build up more steam and I'm the one that hasn't been beaten.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it's like, at home, he already had the crowd on his favor because now they're going to boo the shit out of him as a heel because I'm a hometown boy.
Yeah.
You know? So that's what that was about. But I never had problems with Flair, you know? And I run into him once in a while here, and I still don't have problems with him. And I hope he doesn't have problems with me.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. We had gone to, funny story, we had gone to to Rocky Johnson's funeral, my wife and I. And, you know, a bunch of the guys were there. Rocky was a good guy.
Yeah.
And Flair was there with his wife. And she smiled at me, and I smiled. And she came and gave me a big hug, which she was a sweetheart, you know. Mm-hmm. And she gave me a big hug. And I seen Rick coming from the side. He squeezed his arm between us. And he tells me, he says, "I didn't trust you back then. I'm not going to trust you now." <I'm> like, And my wife is standing right there. And she goes, "Wow, what was that about?" I guess a heartthrob got to him before, too. But, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
I heard a part of a story here of adding on to what you were saying about, you know, putting him over in your hometown and stuff. Was there ever a point that it says something like you told Gary Hart that you was going to stretch Flair, and Hart went and told them or something, and then you and Gary kind of had a bit of a falling out after that?
None of that's true.
Okay.
Okay.
None of that was.
I did read that.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah, I read that.
Did you really?
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
That's.
Now,
I told.
I'll tell you. Go ahead.
I told Jimmy before we got on the phone with you, I said, "Hey, man, I just read this thing that said I said, I know you're going to ask me a bunch of Gary Hart questions. I said, that might be a touchy subject from what I just read."
But I've heard Al talk about Gary before, so I knew,
Yeah. Gary was great. And then if I had said that, Gary would never have related to Flair.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
And Gary would have probably talked me down if I was at that point.
Okay.
But now, Gary, that never happened. Like I said, I never had any issues with Smith.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Never had any problems, you know. So
that damn internet, man, it'll put stuff on you and
yeah.
people take it for gospel.
Yeah.
That's why I had to ask.
And that's what's wrong with the country today.
Amen. Yeah. You ain't Amen. Lying. Well, you know, one big misconception, I think, is the misconception about, hold on, how did he do it? Sting. The Black Scorpion. Sting? Yeah, how did? Scorpion. Yeah, yeah. I've heard stories that you were supposed to be the guy the whole time. I've heard stories that you were only supposed to do it one time, and that was the deal. What was the story with that?
Okay, they wanted me to be this Black Scorpion. At the time, Flair was in charge.
Okay.
So that ended that. I did it one time.
Okay.
Okay. And that's all they brought me in for, was the one time. I'd never heard anything else about doing it more.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. And that was the only match I ever had with Sting.
Okay. Mm. Okay.
You know, and I put him over like I was supposed to, and had two masks on. He pulled the first mask off. I still had the mask on. And then they had another Black Scorpion on the runway up where, you know, the camera hit, and there he was. And that wasn't even Flair. That was my cousin Lou.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And, you know, just stuff like that. But I was never asked to do it, because I would have done it.
Yeah.
Like I said, I didn't have any problems. And here, I'm going to knock him a little bit, okay? Because when Sting first started, I don't have a problem telling the truth.
Right.
Okay. When Sting first started with Dingo, all he could sell was pictures. The little girls loved him. All the makeup, all the paint. The little girls loved him. He could sell pictures. He couldn't sell tickets.
Yeah.
Okay. And here, one of the incidents that we had, I had just put Nikita over in Miami, Florida. And I put him over in the middle of the ring, and I got my heat back. You know, Gary come in the ring. Like I said, he hit the mat, and Nikita turned around, and I got my heat back on him. And Dusty sends Sting to the ring. And Sting comes, gets right in my face. He tells me, get out. And I told him, you get out. He says, get out of here now. And there's no way. I don't know if you ever followed my, I never ran from anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But that's how I was. I never, I would back off.
Mm-hmm.
But I never ran from anybody. Oh, here comes Sting. Hit the ring. And everybody screwed. I never did that.
Gotcha.
Okay. I never did that. Jim Duggan with his 2x4. I never did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I was screwed out. I mean, I was back off and screwed out. But this guy confronts me right in my face in Florida.
Uh-huh.
And he tells me, get out. I said, you, and he dropped the F-bomb a few times. Yeah. You get out. And Gary just put his arm between us like that. He says, come on, Alf, let's go. And we just backed off and left the ring and got mm-hmm. my heat back. Well, Sting ran to Dusty and tells Dusty, Al didn't run. He didn't leave the ring. And Dusty told him, next time, take a chair. You know? There was a few things like that happened with, you know, Sting like that. There was a dressing room incident one time. I can't even say that story. That's pretty nasty.
I mean, you can if you want, but if you don't want to.
Okay, now that you twisted my arm. certain things in life for real that I don't, like, I can't put up with. And that's children, handicapped children, you know, disabled children and stuff like that, even disabled adults.
Right.
Okay, we were in Miami, and a couple of people had brought two guys or three guys in wheelchairs, you know, to sign autographs, you know. And, of course, Sting's a baby face and Dr. Death, you know, they're all they're real good guys, you know. And they did it, and I was sitting right there minding my own business. And when they wheeled these three guys out, they start making fun of the kids.
Mm.
And that, to me, I didn't give it. If they wanted me to put Sting over, then I would beat the shit out of them first.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, man. You know,
that's jacked up.
So, you know, they always made the comment, the bad guy in the street is really your good guy.
The good guy in the street
is really your asshole.
Right. Yeah. I've heard that a million times. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what it was.
Yeah.
Well, that means you're a true baby face, Mr.
Right, Trump. Right.
Oh, my God, don't tell me that.
Heck yeah, man. And so, Jimmy, you got the info on where Al's going to be for Captain Nick coming up. Why don't you tell him about that?
Well, speaking of good guys, you know, we've got our buddy Nick at Captain's Corner. He's a hustler from way back. And, you know, we've partnered with him to bring some guests on to talk about his event. So on April 20th, you're going to be at the Glory Days Grapple Con. And there's actually going to be a cool special Q&A. And it's going to be Heroes of the Sportatorium from World Class at the Rosen Center Hotel, Orlando, Florida, Saturday, April 20th. It's going to have One Man Gang. It's hosted by Mark Lawrence, Missy Hyatt, Jack Victory, Brian Adias, and Al Effin Perez. So,
y'all know more about it than I do.
Well, you're going to be somewhere, and they're going to want to see you. So,
yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there. You know, I got my girlfriend Lori.
Yeah,
she takes care of all my publicity and stuff like that.
That's cool.
And everybody out there knows if they want to get a hold of me, you have to go through her.
There you go. Yeah, you know? I love it.
And she's taken care of me for years.
That's awesome.
You know, she's awesome. She really is great, you know. And my wife loves her.
That's
cool. So that's a real big part, you know.
Yes.
We were in North Carolina.
We were in
North Carolina one time. And I had my wife, my son, my grandson, my two nieces with us. Mm-hmm. And we rented a house up there for, I think it was Thanksgiving. I had an autograph session somewhere else. And they dropped me off there, and that's the first time my wife met Lori. And it was like they were like best friends forever. My gosh, don't worry, I'll take care of it. I know you are, and all this stuff. So it's like, you know. But Lori is a fantastic person.
Yeah.
And Nick awesome. And all these people know how to get a hold of me. Got to go through her.
That's cool.
That's my unpaid agent. How's that?
Everybody's
you know,
got an agent.
She loves doing it too, you know.
That's very cool, man.
But yeah,
cool.
Glory days.
Yeah, we, so don't miss that opportunity, y'all. So
yeah, for real. That'd be very cool. I wish I could be there to just say hello, man. I wish we would have crossed paths before you got out, but it didn't
hell happen. No, after you stole my move.
you would have stretched me, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
That would have been the angle right there, though, the Battle of the Worry Birds, man.
That's awesome.
Because you know, you're what, 6'1"?
Well, I was 6'2". The last time I measured, I said I'm down to 5'11".
Oh, man.
I think I might have dropped an inch when I just got a hip replacement. There we go. I might have shrunk just a little bit. But yeah, man. Dude, it's been awesome having you on here. We were, like I said, really excited to have you on.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Cool, man.
I'm looking forward to seeing you. Are you all going to be there on the 20th?
We wish. I'm up in Kentucky and he's in North Carolina. So.
Oh, man. All right. Well, maybe I'll run into you somewhere else.
Yeah, we will.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
But again, thank you for coming on. And listeners, we will be right back with Ask Wolfie D Anything. Thank you, Al.
Thank you so much,
Al. No problem, man. Anytime.
Yeah. Take care, man.
Have a good one.
Buddy, I'll take care.
Bye. Seriously, an honor. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks.
Yes, sir.
All right, DJ, hit the music. All right, we are back with Ask Wolfie D Anything, and man, oh man, Al Perez, the coolest of the cool right there.
Yeah, man, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Can't imagine, though, seriously, man, Slash versus Al Perez in the Battle of the Whirly Birds, man.
Oh, my God.
Man, I would have marked out for it, but I don't. Maybe nobody else would have. But maybe.
No, that would have been incredible, man. Because I mean, you know, that would have been incredible. Two different techniques, two different styles.
Yeah.
But when it came down to it, who's going to get that whirly
bird? Who's the baby face?
Yeah. No, him. I think would have to be. I don't know.
Baby. Yeah.
He's been the heel longer, though. You know what I mean?
And that's like he was saying. You know, he found his stride when he became a heel, and me too.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, you know, but today's times, if I mean, I'm assuming you would have to do it in today's times. You don't have to, but you know what I mean? Since we're being totally fictitious here. But what I mean by that is, in today's times, heels and heels can fight, and babies can fight. And,
yeah.
You know, so it's not a big deal. So, you know, what's funny is actually this is the first question for Ask Wolfie. I think I need to go right into this. So Cause Effect from Instagram sent us a question and it says, Sean Spears has re-debuted on NXT and his style reminded me quite a bit of Wolfie working as Slash. Wondering what Wolfie thinks of him and that idea. Thanks for always entertaining us.
Yeah, I've seen him once or twice, and I think a lot of it has to do with the gear, first of all.
Definitely the gear.
And then there's a little bit of a – I mean, I can see it. I can see it. You know what I mean?
Like, okay, so the clip that he sent with this question, and I sent it to you, when he does the pin, he, like, slides up on the guy. It's almost like if it weren't so sinister, you could even question maybe that it's sexual a little bit.
Yeah,
but as he slides up on the dude, very sinisterly, he drives his elbow across the guy's – his forearm bone across the guy's face. Yeah, totally Arn Anderson, yes. But that also totally seems like something Slash would have done, too.
I think I've done it. It wasn't something I used all the time, but I think I did that.
Yeah, but I agree. The gear definitely screamed Slash.
Yeah.
But there was just move mannerisms.
I could see it.
The, like, quick strikes, but also, you know, like, kind of methodical, but then – it's like when you would get to the impact, it would be kind of quick, and then it would come methodical. I don't know. It was a good question. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
All right. Our next one is from Daniel Chad Whitehead. He always has good questions. He says, I was always told the ceiling at the Nashville Fairgrounds was not carpet, but tar from smokers when I was a kid. Is there any truth to that?
I thought it was insulation.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm serious. I thought it was like fire insulation or whatever.
I guarantee that's probably what it is. Yeah.
And I think because it was, I want to say it was gray. And then when TNA took over, they painted it black, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Painted everything black.
Yeah, it was a void in there. But anyway, that's that. I mean, so I agree. I think it is that fire insulation because of all the smokers, which would have turned the ceiling into tar, you know. I mean, I think you're right. I think it is insulation. It's definitely not carpet. I know that.
No.
And then also, that's a lot. I mean, I could see the tar thing, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, because, I mean, think of all the smokers in the Gulas era, dude. Can you imagine?
But, you know, when you go to somebody's house and smokes indoors, it just turns them yellow. It doesn't turn it into tar.
It's a good point. Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. That's true. Well, thank you for that question, Daniel. We definitely appreciate that. And then our third and final question. Okay, so the next question is from Billy N. Bessinger, and he asked this question. He says, favorite tag team partner, not named Jamie Dundee?
Brian Lee.
Yeah, Brian Lee. Come on.
Without a diz out.
Okay, so favorite tag team partner, not named Jamie Dundee and not named Brian Lee. Yeah. No.
It has to be Sin Bodhi or Flash Flanagan.
Man, y'all had some good ones with Flash. Mm-hmm. And Sin, too. Don't get me wrong. But, yeah. I mean, is that more because of the dudes that they are, or is it the tag, like, chemistry?
For both of them, they both were my partners in TNA, if you recall.
I do,
Also, me and Flash have a long history of battles and partnership. And Sin, I thought, was really good with me in TNA. You know, he was always coming up with stuff as to where I think at that point I was burning out a little bit, man, because, you know, it's like, I got this partner. Okay, what the fuck are they going to do with me now? You know what I mean? It's like and he was gung-ho as to where, like I said, I was just kind of like, ugh. And so he kind of helped me with that, you know. You feel me?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, so he kind of, he gave you a new set of batteries almost, like.
Yeah, when I was slacking, you know, he'd come up with some moves and stuff like that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He was thinking as to where I was just like, ugh. And it wasn't because of him. It was just like, man, how many partners? I mean, when are we going to settle in here and get something going?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, can we hang on to somebody? One person. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, or put me as a singles. Was that ever in the ideas? Or?
I mean, I'd have been down with it. And then, yeah, I did some single matches.
Right. But, right.
Yeah. I mean, I'd have been completely down with it.
Right. Right.
Even though I like tag team wrestling better. And I think I'm a better tag team wrestler.
So there you go. Answered. And answered. I love it. All right. Well, thank you, Billy. Thank you all for asking the awesome questions today. We always appreciate y'all. And that is it, brother.
All right, man. Thank you again for listening, everybody. Tune in. Go to YouTube. We're dropping every Monday. Everything's dropping everywhere. We're just dropping shit everywhere. I mean, all over the place. YouTube, Apple, wherever, man. Y'all get to YouTube. Help us out to build that page, too. You've done a great job listening to us everywhere else. And now you have an opportunity to listen at 12 noon on YouTube now. So we're not waiting to release stuff, man. That's going to be awesome. And y'all help us out. Help us by subscribing and listening to our YouTube channel. So until next week, same wolf time, same wolf channel. This is Wolfie D signing out. Thank you, Al Perez, and we'll see you guys next week.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Give Me Back My Pro Wrestling, the podcast that's based on the old school, but can still help you find the good stuff from today. Jimmy Street and the Plastic Sheik, Jared, are the undisputed tag team champions of the wrestling podcast world. From thought-provoking topics to superstar interviews to action figure expertise, this team does it all. And all they ask is, give me back my pro wrestling! Every other Thursday, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Join me, Gene Jackson, for the Jackson Interaction Podcast, where I'll be doing one-on-one interviews with people from the world of professional wrestling, as well as stand-up comedy. You can get them anywhere podcasts are available in both video and audio form, but you can find them all at GeneJacksonPod.com.
That's right, it's the talk of Middle Tennessee, the channel you love to hate and the channel you hate to love. It's Brian Turner from Brian Turner's VHS Rehab. And if you're looking for matches from Wolfie D to Jerry Lawler to Dusty Rhodes and the team that put a pimp before your eyes and a goatee between your thighs, Boudica and Athena, go to LostWrestling.com. See, I made it easy for you. Brian Turner's VHS Rehab. Booyah!
So that was another great episode. Hey, Wolfie, tell them where they can find you on social media.
Jimmy, they can find me in the club, bottle full of bub. I'm just kidding. They can find me on Facebook. My personal page is Warren Wolf, W-O-L-F-E. I'm on Instagram, at WarrenWolf13.
You can always find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, at LiveWolfieD. Here's the thing. Wolfie always has offers for his autographed photos. He has a selection of some awesome photos from throughout his career that he will autograph and personalize any way that you want him to. Just contact him either directly at his personal Facebook page or through any one of our other pages, and we'll make sure you get in contact directly with Wolfie. Get those photos, right, Wolfie?
Yeah, I've got some good stuff on there, you know, to help with the podcast.
Folks, if you can't get out to a show to meet Wolfie D, there's nothing like that, especially for the fans of PG-13 and Wolfie D. And before we go, you can always find me, your host, Jimmy Street, at James Rock Street on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.
And hey, Jimmy, before we go real quick, I just want to add in there, from the bottom of my heart, I really appreciate, first of all, the work you've done for this podcast. You have worked your butt off. Secondly, the people that are liking the page. Beyond that, even more, is the people that are listening. And we really appreciate that.
Yeah, and remember, guys, the podcast drops a new episode every Monday at noon, and our past episodes are streaming now on demand on all major podcast formats. Thanks again.
I got a cap for your dome.
He got a cap for your dome.
I got a cap for your dome.
He got a cap for your dome.
original white boy that came out sagging, not bragging, don't be hating, cause I'm spitting the truth, still live and in color, from rush your mother, utilize a hubcap, I'm like any other, back in the day, I was N.O.D., and I was P to the G, plus the 1 and the 3, in case you forgot, they call me Wolfie D, been cloned and copied so many times, tired of suckers taking credit for what is mine. You know who you are, without me name dropping. Wrestling's first white boy coming out hip-hop. Been doing it like this since 92. Laid low for a while when you thought I was through. Listen real close to these rhymes that I've injected. This shit's so sick it makes your ears get infected. Mad skills, no faking, there is no one great. Cause I'm bringing more folks than Obi-Wan or Vader. Not here to play games, so you better beware. You don't like me, so what? I really don't care. Like time I keep ticking and I can't be stopped. You suck a step to the side unless you wanna get dropped. When I finish, I'll straight knock you out. Please allow me to tell you what it's all about. I'm gonna wind it up, then I'm driving it home. It's Wolfie D, baby. Huh, I got a cap for your dome.
You got a cap for your dome.
This has been a James Rock Street production.